because I didn't have so much information about you.
All right, so first of all, thank you for inviting me. It's good to be here, and I do look forward to the discussion afterwards. Much of my work in spirituality is very practical. It's very much working with people, whether as a minister or as a person working with people who are addicted to drugs and alcohol in the middle of their recovery, or in the interfaith context. So you're more theoretical, and your Islamic perspectives will be helpful to me. I will introduce myself a little bit. I'm an ordained Mennonite minister, and I'm assistant professor of spiritual care and psychotherapy at Waterloo Lutheran Seminary, which will soon be Martin Luther University College. We're renaming the institution. And I want to say spirituality was not a topic.
So you're Mennonite, yes?
Yes, I'm Mennonite. Okay. Yes, yeah. I'm very Mennonite, yeah. But I'm teaching at a Lutheran seminary and head up the interfaith work. So spirituality was not a topic when I was in seminary in 1969 to 72. It wasn't on the agenda, so I had to find it. And as I said previously, my journey into spirituality for myself and also as a study was much more with men and women who were struggling with addiction and recovery, because through the addiction recovery movement, we know that if the people don't understand spirituality or don't get in touch with the issues in spirituality, they probably do not recover. They probably go back to using alcohol and drugs or being a part of a process addiction. And so my journey continued with Interfaith Grand River, which has we're now 17 years old, and with the Waterloo Regional Hospice, where I trained workers to go out and work with people who were in situations of near death. I come from a community of 550,000, which is about 100 kilometers from Toronto. 40% of the people in our community were not born in Canada, and 24% are recognizably different in that they wear a kippah, if they're Jewish, or a hijab, or some other kind, or they're black or brown or whatever, so they're recognizable. And so this change has occurred in the last 40 years, and that in itself is an issue of change for people around spiritual issues. How do we accept those, everybody, and how do we treat everybody with dignity? And we have two universities in the area, and there are a lot of people. In fact, we have 300 Iranians studying engineering at one of our universities, engineering, information technology, chemistry, science. And there's been a significant backlash as white Canadians, traditional Canadians, see their community change radically, and some are very, very afraid of all the change. And so I'm going to make a presentation more as a practitioner. I've got some comments in around spirituality, and I'll be interested in you commenting on the issues you see from an Islamic or spiritual perspective. Whoops, I went the wrong way. So I want to just put a practical definition, or a very short, easy definition of spirituality, how it affects the deeper understandings of our lives and our actions. And for us, I want to also say that I didn't put it up here, we live in a very secular culture in Canada, as any of you who've been there will know. We're more religious than England and less religious than the United States. And so the whole idea of transcendent and immanent is very, very important in working with the people in our community. And for some people, coming to a connection with God, Allah, is an important part of the struggle. I understand spirituality in terms of being a journey of life, from life to death, birth to death. I understand spirituality, especially when I worked with hospice, as being the life review. How do I find the meaning of my life? How do I find my life's purpose? How do I understand the ideals that I'm living out of? And how is God going to be with me now and in the future beyond life? So there's also a whole sense of spirituality that we that I work with, is, which is a sense of love. Do I love myself? Do I love other people? Do I find there's a place for me on the earth where I can sort of, in a different way, love the earth, or the earth loves me, the other people love me? And do I sense that there's a love for God and from God? So with all of these, is there a love for and from others? Is there a love for and from the earth? And is there a love for and from God? And so then we move into practices which draw us deeper into these very, very significant questions. Whether the practices be mindfulness or meditation or worship or prayer, or in the case of interfaith, the intersection with people of other faiths. So Interfaith Grand River, which I've been a part of and was one of the founders, began in 2001. We began 2 days after 9/11. We planned all spring and summer and looked at each other and said, who are we? Why are we looking at each other? What happened that we gather from the different faith groups you see up there, Buddhist, Christian, Hindu, Muslim. Both we have Ismaili and Shia and Sunni, and we have had some other branches of Islam with us as well. Then we also interact with the hospitals, the schools, and the social services and the multicultural center. And we begin every meeting with at least an hour of discussion on a topic. It could be something like justice or marriage or what happens as you die or how do you pray, or anyway, we have had a multitude of issues that we talk about. And then we take about 40 minutes for business. And one of the things I think that's happened in the process is that we become friends of one another. And so in the midst of our discussions about how faith interacts with our lives, we develop a deep and profound understanding of the other person's faith, and we become friends who can talk with each other and who also can move into places in our community and alleviate conflict, which is one of the important things we've done. So not everybody is capable of joining an interfaith movement. I work with, I don't know how many of you do, but I work a lot with the understandings of Paul Nitter and Alan Race. Paul is Catholic from U.S., and Alan is Anglican from the U.K., and they say we have the exclusive or the replacement people who are obviously are not a part of interfaith because they're there to convert other people, and in the interfaith movement we're there to learn from other people, we're there to open ourselves to other people and find out what they're thinking. The inclusive people would be part of Karl Rahner out of Vatican II, where he talked about anonymous Christians, and that all of you can become an anonymous Christian if Rahner labels you that way. I don't particularly like that. And one day in Interfaith Grand River, one of the Hindu people decided that we were all anonymous Hindus, which sort of set up a little bit of a question because, well, he said, you have Muhammad and I have Jesus and the Jews have Moses. We just have these, you know, we're all anonymous Hindus. We all have the Allah, I don't know how they name the God in that way, but they do. Anyway, but interpreting your faith in light of mine would be more the inclusive, and the pluralist would be open to bringing more and more of our religions together. And the postmodern, which is the latest one that Paul Nitter has put there, is where each of us have our own faiths. He uses the term, in the first three, we're walking up the same mountain. In the last one, we're walking up different mountains, but we respect each other, and we understand, and we work to understand each other. And the one that I'm kind of interested in and would like to pursue a bit is we have a whole lot of people who talk about being spiritual but not religious in Canada and in the United States as well. Britain, they're studying this as well in Britain. And I call them searchers. They don't last very long in interfaith because they're trying to find out which of the religions is the one that they want to grasp onto, rather than actually bringing something, a depth of religion, a depth of practice of faith and understanding. But they are part of the movement from time to time. And Nitter also talks about, and I'm sure you would, most of you would be familiar with this, the different bridges we go across. We go across all of these bridges. There's the philosophical, historical dialogue of learning different theologies. This is where things like Shia Mennonite dialogue would take place, where we're trying to compare concepts or we're trying to discuss a certain concept in one way or another. He says also the mystic is another bridge that we can cross. In fact, it's an easier one sometimes than the philosophical historical, because in the mystical, I just read a book by the Dalai Lama around interfaith, and part of what he did is he went to the Sikh, he went to the Muslim, he went to the Jain, he went to the Hindu, he went to the Christian, and he worked on worshiping with each of those and praying, learning how to pray and meditate with each of those, and found it deeply and profoundly meaningful for him. The one that many of us work at the easiest is the ethical practical, where we go out and we do projects together, whether it's building houses for the poor or whether it's cleaning up the environment or whatever it's doing. We can cross the barrier and we make friends with people of other faiths and we begin to let those other faiths impact our own faith. So the people coming together for us are generally rooted in their own faith and in their own tradition and practice. The people are able to articulate their beliefs and their practices and their history, and they are also able to listen to everybody else. We would say, I think I say it later on, so I won't. But anyway, listening is as important as talking. So in interfaith, we each bring ourselves. We bring our own informed perspective. I happen to be a Mennonite, but if any of you have learned to know anything about Mennonites, we have people who drive horse and buggies and live without electricity, all the way to people who are like myself who come to Iran and live, you know, drive cars and look quote-unquote normal. So I can't be a representative of the Mennonite community in interfaith. I bring an informed perspective where I know all of my brothers and sisters from across the Mennonite continuum, and I try to articulate what our faith has to say to different issues. And then other people will do the same, whether it's from Islam or whether it's from other particular perspectives. Some dialogues obviously have representatives, like the Shia Mennonite is a much more representative dialogue. But again, I would sense that one of the things we do in interfaith is we bring an informed perspective, and we don't try to say everybody in the Mennonite community is like me, but I certainly have worked hard and been long involved. Interfaith discussion is not a debate. It is a way of opening each person to a different understanding of the other. And I think this is a good practice as well. What we've found is not only do I open myself to the other, most people think, well, maybe I'll become a Jew or a Muslim or a Hindu or something like that because I learn more and more about the other. What actually happens is because I have to articulate my own beliefs and have to listen and try to understand others, two things happen. One is that I become more and more convinced of my own spirituality and I deepen my own sense of my Mennonite community, whether that be pacifism or whether that be our forms of worship and singing and understanding Jesus in new ways. At the same time, I learn things that increase my ability or even confirm my own faith stance, my own spirituality, my own way of operating in the world.
اول جلسه گفتیم که دوستان انگلیسی میدونن اصلا فهمیدن که انگلیسی نیاز به ترجمه نداره. همچنان نیاز به ترجمه نیست که.
خلاصه اگر بگیم.
Sorry, when you talk for a couple of pages, I will stop you to give the summary to the people.
Sure. Okay. I'm happy.
تا اینجای صحبتشون ایشون معرفی کردن خودشونو. آقای دکتر برایس بالمر از دانشگاه واترلو کانادا هستن. ایشون اصالتا منونایت هستن. منونایت ها یک گروهی از مسیحیان هستن که متوجه من اطلاعاتم بیشتر تو کانادا هستن و بعضیشون به زندگی مدرن علاقمند نیستن و حتی بعضیشون هم برق و ماشین و اینا استفاده نمی کنن. اما افرادی هستن از منونایت ها که از زندگی وسایل روزمره استفاده کنن. ایشون میفرمان که من از اون گروه هستم، بنابراین گفتن که من نماینده منونایت ها نیستم، نمیتونم باشم چون من تو دنیای مدرن زندگی می‌کنم و استفاده می‌کنم. اما منونایت‌ها به زندگی سنتی علاقه‌مند هستن. و یه گفتگوی هم بین مؤسسات ایرانی، مؤسسه آقای حاجی مصباح و همچنین آقای دکتر شمالی هم هر ساله با ایشون دارن که آقای دکتر شمالی 7-8 دوره برگزار کردن. ایشون تمرکزشون بر معنویت درمانی هست، مشاوره و معنوی درمانی، و گفتن که به ما خیلی افراد مختلفی رجوع میکنن که بعضیشون حتی مسلمان، منطقه‌ای که ایشون زندگی میکنن در اونجا مسلمانان، اسماعیلی ها، هندوها و افراد مختلف از ادیان مختلف زندگی میکنن و برای ایشون در معنویت درمانی مشاوره میدن بهشون. گفتن که الان یک علاقه پیدا شده به معنویت بدون دین، یعنی معنویتی که در دین‌ها دنبال نمی‌کنن. اما نظر ایشون این بود که حتی اونها هم درست معنویت بدون دین رو علاقمند هستن، اما اونها هم دارن می‌گردن ببینن کدوم دین با اون معنویت مورد علاقه اینها تطابق بیشتری داره که اون دین رو انتخاب بکنن. یعنی فهمیدن که دنبال بودن معنویت یه پولی هست برای رسیدن شاید به دینی، یعنی اونها هم در حال جستجو هستن. و یه مطلبی هم نقل کردن از یه هندو که اون هندو میگفت به من میگفت که اون هندو میگفت که چی؟ میگفت که شما مسیحی ها هم در حقیقت هندو هستید، چون به دین و چیزی که اعتقاد دارید اون چیزی که راستی و حقیقت و درستی عمل میکنید. در سه جا ما میتونیم به همدیگه پل بزنیم. گفتن که یکی گفتگوی بین ما و ادیان دیگه، دومی مسئله عرفان میسیزم، یعنی عرفان معنویت رابطه ای است بین ما و ادیان دیگه، و سوم اخلاق. اینا میتونه پل باشه بین ما و شما. و مطلب آخر ایشون گفتن که گفتگو برای بحث یا اثبات نظر خود یا مجادله نیست، گفتگو برای اینکه ما خودمون رو بیشتر معرفی بکنیم و اینکه من هم سعی میکنم در این گفتگوها از دیگران یاد بگیرم و علوم به علم خودم اضافه بکنم.
Just tell me when you want me to stop. So I think, you know, for me, one of the really, I've been working with the students at the International Institute for Islamic Studies on Interfaith Peace and Justice, and I think one of these points that's really important in terms of our practice is that we always talk about our perspective and we never debate. We try to understand and not debate, and perhaps that's what we need to do in our world. As people learn to know each other, as we work with each other, there's safety. And one of the most important things that I think of in terms of how people heal and how people move to different places is the whole question of safety, so that we can, in the middle of safety, we can actually be receptive to the words of the other, which are different than our own, and we can be receptive to ideas and test them out without thinking that we're going to be judged. We're there for being understood. And then there is the comparison of my beliefs with others or their beliefs with mine. And we often come to a new understanding in the interfaith, but when two of the Islamic students came from here to, and were in my class on trauma and theodicy, the students said, "Bryce, we don't lament in Islam, we accept. We accept and know that God will help us through it." And so we, you know, I ran into some problems on the way home, and I thought, okay, Bryce, when I was here in Qum on the way home, and so I thought, okay, Bryce, maybe you need to learn to accept instead of lament. So we tried out each other's practices to find out how we can understand them, and sometimes I still lament anyway, but try. In our Western concept, some are able to return or begin established practices in their own faith. Like, and this is, we have had illustrations where because of our secular world and the expectations of white culture on everybody else and Christian culture, Christian Jewish culture, many have not been able to practice the faith the way they want, they wish to practice it. And one example was sick people who cut their hair and stopped wearing turbans and the other signs of their faith. And so one of the beautiful things about interfaith and the spirituality that's embedded in our organization is that people have, one of the men started wearing the turban again, started wearing the bracelet, and the rest of the signs. And so I think that's an important part of what we're doing in the community, is allowing people, by our own acceptance of the other becomes more himself or herself. And again, there are always questions being asked, but there's respect. Prejudicial statements have been made in the interfaith. We had, and when they are made, and when somebody is working, you know, has some real questions about somebody else, or is making some what I would call prejudicial or derogatory comments, it isn't just the person who suffers the questions. It's other people work with him. So in Interfaith Grand River, some Hindu was making very, very prejudicial, negative comments about some of our Islamic people who were participating. And so a number of us sat down with him and two Muslim people, and we said, this needs to stop. And the Muslim person could articulate how it hurt them. He said why he felt that way. We went around the table. Unfortunately, in that one, we did not resolve it. And the Hindu person, partly it came out of some really difficult experiences in India in the 50s. He actually ended up leaving the Interfaith Grand River. We also had a program, which a time when we used restorative justice, where a person from Egypt who was Muslim made some very, very negative comments after a peace person from Israel had also made comments saying that all Israeli adults were part of the military, so anybody could be shot. And the person said, well, all Palestinians are radicals, so anybody can be shot. And it ended up that the Jewish person lost his job and the Muslim person almost lost their jobs. But we said, this Muslim person lives in our community. We need to find out what went on and why he said what he said and review it. And so we did a restorative justice process, and he was welcomed back into the community again when we understood what had happened and how things had gone. And there were Jews who were a part of the restorative justice process. In fact, one Jew actually had been taken some shrapnel in Jerusalem, and he concurred with the way we handled it. And so there are many outside events that also impact what we do. There were a bunch of gravestones that were overturned at the Jewish cemetery, and they had a service at the synagogue, and we completely filled the synagogue with people who said, this should not be happening in our community, and participated in a service. So we constantly are interacting with the environment, trying to bring questions of peace and justice and health and restorative relationships in our community. Go ahead. Yeah. Good. And I'll drink tea.
ایشون دوباره تاکید کردن که ما تو این بحثایی که با متدینین به ادیان مختلف داشتن تاکید داشتیم که مجادله نه فهم آری، یعنی ما دنبال بحث دیبیت با هم دیگه نیستیم، مناظره با هم دیگه نیستیم. بر اهمیت نقش امنیت در فهم یکدیگر تاکید داشتن که اگر امنیت نباشه و بین گروه ها مجادله باشه، امنیت در میان نباشه، نمیتونیم همدیگر درک بکنیم. ایشون گفتن که الان در کانادا برخی از متدینین به ادیان مختلف رو آوردن به نشانه های خودشون. یه مدت این نشانه ها رو مثل عمامه رو سیک ها و هندوها کنار گذاشته بودن در کانادا. الان میگه دوباره رو آوردن و دوباره اون نشانه های دینی خودشون رو با خودشون هم میکنن. مثلا سیک ها یا هندوها عمامه به سر میذارن. یکی از شرط‌های گفتگو و شناخت همدیگر کنار گذاشتن پیش‌داوری‌ها گفتن باید باشه. پیش‌داوری باعث میشه که ما از هم دیگه رو درست نشناسیم. بسیار برخی از سوالات ما بر اساس پیشداوری‌های نادرست خیال می‌کنیم که گروه مقابل به یک چیزی معتقده، در حالی که این اصلا اعتقاد اونها نیست. بر اساس اون سوال می‌پرسیم. نمونه‌هایی ذکر کردن از هندوها، گفتن که پیشداوری‌هایی دارن در مورد مسلمانان. فکر می‌کنن که تمام مسلمانان مثلا خشونت و با تفکر خشونت‌آمیز و افراطی و اینا هستن. و همچنین مثال دارن از یه مصری و اسرائیلی که با هم دیگه گفتگو کردن و یکی از گفتگوها با هم دیگه درگیری لفظی پیدا کردن و هر دو از کاری که در دانشگاه داشتن برکنار شدن.
So the lament is in the Psalms and even in Jesus. A lament is where you cry out against God, you question God, you you know, as a first part of a grief, you know, when you've encountered something, you say, God, why did this happen? Why did you let this happen? Why did you create the world the way you did?
اون یه چیزی مطلبی که من جا درست نفهمیده بودم، گفتن که یکی از دانشجویان مسلمان که از ایران اومده بود اینجا، گفت که ما به خداوند شکایت نمی کنیم که چرا این کار رو انجام دادی، چرا مثلا شکوه و شکایت با خداوند بر خداوند نمی کنیم.
Okay. So, yeah, my students, after we had that experience, said, well, now how do we do psychological, my Muslim students said, well, we like psychological grief, grief studies, and then we also are Muslim, so how do we put the two together? So it was a real chance for them to kind of think through their faith and their psychology. We've had lots of surprises that have been helpful. One is that so many Hebrew and Arabic concepts are similar between the Jews and the Muslims. We also had a discussion of Sharia, and because the Ontario government wanted to put Sharia as a concept that Muslim people could use for family matters in particular, and there was a great big upheaval. People said we shouldn't do this, this can't happen. The law of Canada has to be the most important, which it was anyway. And the Jewish community said, well, we have our own kind of Sharia where we negotiate divorces and the issues with children and marriages and on, and then we as Christians had to say, yes, we do the marriages, we work with our people on these critical issues of family as well. So while the public was opposed to Sharia, the interfaith community felt that Sharia understood could be all right. We found out that there was not a word for justice in Buddhism, so we had to figure out how to handle that. We found out that there was unanimous agreement to stop passing out proselytizing Bibles to fifth grade children in the public schools. We found out that we opened doors so that there are now places of meditation and prayer at the universities and the hospitals that are interfaith, that whether you're indigenous, meaning Native American, or whether you're Muslim, or whether you're a Christian, you could go into these places of, and we were unanimous in terms of how to do that. Unfortunately, the hospital never put up, the universities did, but the hospitals didn't put any source of water in those rooms to do ablutions or other things that we all do with water. We're still waiting. And there's a yearning in our community for spiritual leadership. We are in a secular society, and religion is minimized and often set aside. So it's very, very important for us to come together as people who are deeply and profoundly spiritual and want to live our lives based on religious tenets and religious faith, to come together. It's interesting that more and more people are wanting to join us and wanting to find out what's going on. The police are asking us to explain more about religion to them, which we're planning on doing. We have an interfaith prayer breakfast for 400 people. I didn't put it up here. We're publishing a journal. The Lutheran seminaries have a journal called Consensus, and they ask us to do an interfaith journal. So we're doing that, which will be online. Anybody can read it. And we're having more and more requests for opportunities where people want to understand. They're attracted to a new faith, to a religious, spiritual world, and they don't really understand enough about it in our secular culture. So, interfaith spirituality, or my Christian faith encounters and walks with people of other faiths, keeps me open and receptive while maintaining my core beliefs and values. I'm yearning to have a deeper and more profound relationship with God, Allah, and as I move in the interfaith world, that is, it's deepened in some very significant ways. Many of us are looking at our own and others' faiths rather than beliefs. It's been interesting that faith has become more of a discussion than belief in the interfaith context. James Fowler is a psychologist of religion, and he looks at how we develop, and he says there are seven stages, and I think all of us are growing. When I look at what James Fowler says, he talks about people like Martin Luther King Jr. or Gandhi or some of the Ayatollahs or people of that sort having gotten to a very deep and profound level of faith. It isn't that any of us are anywhere close to being an Ayatollah or Martin Luther King Jr., but we feel that our faith is increasing in the same way that theirs did. And we want to see how the Spirit of God is working in our community in new ways. So I'll let Marahi do the translation, and then maybe you can open up your questions. A lot of what I've given you is experiences that give you a highlight into how we work. In interfaith, it's kind of difficult because we can interpret it from an Islamic perspective, a Christian perspective, a Jewish perspective, and on and on and on, and yet we just have to interpret it as the perspective that it is.
ایشون بر برخی مفاهیم مشترک بین هبرو و عربی یعنی اسلامی تاکید داشت، این مفاهیم مشترک هست بین این دو تا دین. شریعت یه چیز مشترک بین مسلمانان و یهودیان و مسیحیان تا حدودی بر شریعت پایبند هستند. ما در این گفتگوهایی که تا حالا داشتیم به نقاط مشترکی رسیدیم، از جمله که مکان عبادت در جاهای مختلف باید باشه، تو مدارس، تو جاهای عمومی باید یه مکانهایی باشه برای عبادت که در اونجا ادیان مختلف بتونن عبادت بکنن. آموزش دینی و آموزش کتاب مقدس در مراحل ابتدایی آموزش مدارس صورت بگیره. به این نتیجه هم رسیدیم که در بین بودایی ها سخن از عدالت و عدالت طلبی جایگاهی نداره. ما در یه جامعه سکولار زندگی میکنیم و در مطلب قبلی هم گفتن که جامعه کانادا یه چیزی از نه به اندازه جامعه انگلیس بیدین و نه به اندازه آمریکا متدین هستند. این جامعه آمریکایی رو متدین تر از جامعه اروپایی چه ایشون چه از دیگه هم وجود معرفی کردن. آمریکایی ها متدین هستند. ایشون میگن کانادا یک چیزی بین انگلیس و اروپا که دین رو کنار گذاشتن و آمریکا که تا حدودی متدین هستن قرار داد و سکولار هست. بسیاری از مردم به جامعه و اون گروه انجمنی که ما داریم مراجعه میکنن برای به دنبال معنویت و سوالهای در مورد معنویت دارن. ما در یک صبحانه دعایی مثلا 400 نفر شرکت میکنن. یک صبحانه معنوی مثلا صبحانه دعاها و مراسم دینی که هست 400 نفر شرکت میکنن. دنبال فرصتهای جدید برای گفتگو و برای تعامل هستیم. ایمان الان در نزد بسیاری مردم بیشتر از عقاید اهمیت داره. خود ایمان یعنی معنویت بیشتر از عقاید دینی. ایشون میگفتن این بسیاری از افراد بزرگ هم بودن مثل گاندی و برخی از آیت الله ها یعنی بزرگان دین اسلام را میگفتن که ایمان برای اونها مهمتر بود تا عقاید دینی. کار بینادینی مطلب آخرشون فهمیدن که کار بینادینی دشواری هایی داره. هر کدوم از یه بکگراند باید عقاید از جامعه خودش از تفکرات خودش میاد و میخواد گفتگو کنه، برای این کار مشکلی هست. و در نهایت گفتن که ما بعد از این ترجمه منتظر نظرات و ایده های دوستان عزیز هستیم که بفرمایید.